Thank you. My name is Brian Jennings. I'm the Executive Vice President for the American Coalition for Ethanol. More than 100 people representing ACE member companies will testify at today's hearing. My comments will focus on EPA's methodology for setting the 2015 and 2016 RVOs. Today, obligated parties may protest that EPA is breaking the blend wall in 2016, but you need to separate the signal from the noise. EPA's methodology actually enables oil companies to stockpile approximately 2 billion gallons of carryover RINs by 2016. So in reality, your proposal continues to limit ethanol blending to E10. According to Bruce Babcock of Iowa State University, because obligated parties control 80% of refined product terminals, they decide the level of ethanol blending that will or will not occur. And that's why Congress enacted the RFS. Left to their own devices, oil companies won't allow consumer access to E15 and flex fuels. Left to their own devices, oil companies won't reduce the carbon intensity of gasoline. They've earned the label obligated parties based on their refusal to innovate. Congress struck the phrase distribution capacity from the final statute out of concern that oil companies would exploit it to confine ethanol blending at 10%. EPA is conflating the very broad discretion you have under the cellulosic waiver authority with the very narrow, clear, general waiver provisions of the RFS. And legal precedent dictates that when statutory language is clear, EPA must adhere to the statute. No matter how many times EPA says it, the definition of inadequate domestic supply is not ambiguous. It clearly refers to renewable fuel supply, and with U.S. ethanol production capacity exceeding 15 billion gallons, supply is more than adequate. The farmers and biofuel producers who are trying to help EPA succeed with the RFS are mystified that you're siding with oil companies who mock the president's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and take EPA to court every year you roll out new blending targets. EPA cannot take a passive approach with parties whose ultimate goal is to repeal the renewable fuel standard. Doing so turns a program designed to promote innovation and clean air into one that chokes innovation and increases pollution. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Mr. Hogan.
Good morning. I am Tim Hogan, Director of Motor Fuels at the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers. The statutory levels of renewable fuels are unachievable for 2014 to 2016. EPA must preserve a broad interpretation of its waiver authorities. EPA's recognition of the ethanol blend wall and the potential adverse effects on consumers is a welcome first step. However, EPA's actions are short-term in nature and point to the need for Congress to address the severely flawed and outdated renewable fuel standard. The statutory quantities of ethanol to be consumed exceed the technical limitations of many small engines in service today. The majority of existing vehicles and infrastructure cannot handle a gasoline supply containing more than 10% ethanol, which leads to what is referred to as the E10 blend wall. AFPM has proposed a 9.7% cap on ethanol and gasoline because it is the minimum EPA action necessary to retain a supply of pure gasoline for some engines, account for historical differences between EPA projections of gasoline demand and actual demand, and promote liquidity in the renewable identification number market. EPA has the authority and the responsibility to waive the RFS mandates to reflect market realities such as shrinking gasoline consumption, the lack of drop-in biofuels, and the failure of E15 and E85 to provide a home for ethanol. To date, the advanced biofuel requirement has functioned as a de facto mandate for hundreds of millions of gallons of sugarcane ethanol imported from Brazil. This is not what Congress intended. EPA should consider only domestic supply when setting the advanced biofuel and total renewable fuel volumes. EPA needs to preserve carryover RINs, a crucial tool for industry and individual companies to deal with uncertainties and challenges and to provide compliance flexibility. EPA does not have the authority to increase the stringency for biomass-based diesel for 2014 or 2016 or 2015. 14 months lead time is required by the Clean Air Act to set a different value for biomass-based diesel. Therefore, the agency cannot promulgate a volume for biomass-based diesel for 2014 or 2015 or 2016 that is higher than 1.28 billion gallons, the regulatory value for 2013. The law is clear on this point. In relation to the cellulosic portion of the mandate, EPA recognized the statutory levels simply do not exist and has made a downward adjustment from what the law says for 2010 to 2013 and has proposed to continue these very large waivers for 2014 to 2016. However, the agency proposed a cellulosic biofuel requirement for 2016 that far exceeds a reasonable projection of what can actually be produced. In January 2013, the court told EPA to be reasonable and not aspirational. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Next speaker will be Bob Henry from the American Soybean Association. Mr. Henry.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bob Henry, and I am a soybean farmer from Robinson, Kansas. ASA represents thousands of soybean farmers in 30 states. Soybean farmers are very proud of the leading role they have played in establishing and developing the U.S. biodiesel industry. Biodiesel has grown to a point of producing well over 1 billion gallons annually and now has the capacity to produce over 3 billion gallons of domestic, renewable, advanced biofuels. While biodiesel is now made from diverse group of feedstocks, soybean oil remains the largest source of biodiesel feedstock. We are proud of the many benefits that biodiesel provides, including a more diversified energy market, increased domestic energy production, significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions resulting in improved air quality, new jobs and economic development, particularly in rural America, and of course, expanding markets for soybean farmers. We are also proud that biodiesel and the soybean industry has always advocated for RSF volumes that are modest and achievable. We are glad that compared to last year's proposal, which called for just 1.28 billion gallons for 2014 and 15, EPA's new proposed rule increases volumes for biomass-based diesel, starting at 1.63 gallons in 2016 and increasing to 1.9 billion in 2017. We see no reason why EPA should not, at a minimum, support biomass-based diesel volumes of at least 2 billion gallons for 2016 and 2.3 billion gallons for 2017. In addition to the benefits already mentioned, we believe the following factors support our request for higher volumes. Additional soybean oil will be displaced from domestic food markets as a result of the recent FDA determination requiring the elimination of partially hydrogenated oil, which creates trans fats. It is estimated that this will displace an additional 1 to 1.5 billion pounds of soybean oil from food use. The biodiesel market provides an outlet for this surplus soybean oil, which is a byproduct of soybean production that is driven by the demand for soybean meal for protein. Increasing the biomass-based diesel volumes relative to the total advanced biofuels volumes will promote the use of biodiesel over imported Brazilian sugarcane ethanol. While EPA contends the statute does not distinguish between domestic and imported renewable fuels, we believe the intent of the program is clearly to increase domestic energy production and promote U.S. energy independence. EPA should also increase the biomass-based diesel volumes to account for the likelihood of increased imports of biodiesel from Argentina. EPA's proposed volumes for biomass-based diesel should account for these increased imports from Argentina. Thank you for the opportunity for providing these comments today. The ASA, along with our biodiesel industry partners, looks forward to working with EPA to further improve the proposed rules and implementation of a successful RFS program.
Thank you very much, Mr. Henry. Mr. Teske.
Thank you. Don Teske.
Settle down.
Don Teske. I'm a farmer stockman in Pottawatomie County, Kansas, and I'm here representing National Farmers Union and Kansas Farmers Union. Thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony regarding the Renewable Fuel Standard proposed volume targets. NFU supports the volume targets set in the bipartisan legislation that enacted the RFS and urges the EPA to adjust the volume targets for the years in question to match the statutes. NFU supports the RFS for several reasons, including the much-needed reinvestment it drives in rural America and the reduction in U.S. dependency on foreign oil it facilitates. The RFS also carries important environmental benefits, particularly in regard to climate change. Producers across the U.S. are already feeling the impact of increasing weather volatility and disruption of water resources, whether related to precipitation irregularities or loss of river flow due to diminished snowpack. Strong scientific consensus indicates that climate-related challenges to agricultural production will increase and that decisive action is needed to reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases in order to avoid the worst consequences of climate change. Climate change jeopardizes the ability of family farmers to continue farming and the security of our food supply. If the EPA implements the volume targets embodied in the statutes, 138 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions will be directly avoided, equivalent to removing 27 million cars from the road. The volume targets are also needed to drive advances in advanced and cellulosic ethanol. It is anticipated that producing biofuel from these feedstocks will establish additional environmental benefits. Some of the possible feedstocks are perennial, allowing producers to avoid emissions from tilling and planting a field and encouraging the soil to store more carbons. Some of the feedstocks also grow very well with limited water, reducing the need to deploy energy for irrigation and freeing water for other uses where resources are limited. Oil companies have argued that there is insufficient infrastructure to accommodate the volume of biofuels mandated by Congress, allowing EPA to waive some volume requirements. However, Congress did not grant EPA the authority to waive volume requirements under these circumstances. The statutes were specifically designed to force oil companies to build new infrastructure to accommodate increasing amounts of biofuels, opening their monopolistic stranglehold on transportation fuels and allowing consumers more choice. Family farmers and ranchers want to help address climate change, but need policy support to maximize their contribution. Setting volume targets lower than those called for in the bipartisan legislation that enacted the RFS prevents farmers and rural communities from participating in the climate change mitigation. NFU appreciates EPA's work administering the program and the benefits achieved through it today, but it is deeply disappointed by the proposed rule and the clear message it sends to stop investment and development in the biofuels industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Steckel.
Good morning. I'm Ann Steckel with the National Biodiesel Board. We're the trade association that represents the biodiesel and renewable diesel industries. I want to first start off by thanking you all, the EPA staff, for your commitment to administering the program and the hard work that you all did improving the policy from the initial proposal that came out in 2013. Now that the proposal is behind us, we intend to work with you to further strengthen both the biomass-based diesel and the advanced biofuel program. Today, you will hear from biodiesel and renewable diesel supporters and stakeholders throughout the day on how and why we can work together to provide and promote advanced biofuels. According to the EPA's own calculations, biodiesel reduces greenhouse gas emissions by 57 to 86%. With today's feedstock usage ratio, we are averaging approximately 80% greenhouse gas reductions when compared to baseline diesel fuel. This is an incredible reduction, particularly when you consider that the transportation sector accounts for more than a quarter of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, a strong biodiesel growth under the RFS can make a significant impact in helping us reach the President's goals. To meet these goals, we have to take bold action in the transportation sector, not just in electricity. We have to end our dependence on petroleum, and biodiesel is one of the most practical, cost-effective fuels available today to do that. To put that in better perspective, In the last 10 years, we have replaced petroleum diesel with 8.2 billion gallons of biodiesel and have cut 75.5 million metric tons of carbon pollution, an equivalent of removing 15.9 million cars from America's roadways. Imagine what we can do with EPA's help over the next 10 years. The remainder of my statement and our comments will focus on 2016 and 2017. We believe this is where the current proposal can be improved. You have proposed 1.8 billion gallons and 1.9 billion gallons of biomass-based diesel in those years. While we believe our original request for 2.4 billion gallons and 2.7 billion gallons is reasonable and achievable, we are now calling for a modest increase of not less than 2 billion gallons in 2016 and 2.3 billion gallons in 2017. This is a modest increase of 300 million gallons from your proposed volume of 1.7 billion gallons in 2015. While the 300 million gallons means a great deal to our industry, particularly our smaller producers, that small increase is virtually undetectable by the feedstock markets or the petroleum marketplace. Specifically, in response to your proposal, we believe you have significantly underestimated the volume of imports that are already making their way into the U.S., and we will be sharing additional data over the next few months to confirm that. Already, we are seeing an uptick in biodiesel imports from Argentina, and we expect that trend to strongly continue. Thank you for your support today. I appreciate your consideration, and again, urge you to revisit this proposal and issue a final rule with additional growth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cooper.
Well, thank you very much and good morning. My name is Jeff Cooper. I'm speaking on behalf of the Renewable Fuels Association today. I think by any measure you choose, the RFS has been a tremendous success, and we've already heard some of the benefits of the RFS and proven track record of the program to date. And because the program has worked so well, we're extremely disappointed that EPA is again proposing to slash the blending requirements that were enacted by Congress for 2014 through 2016. And you're going to hear a lot of that disappointment, I think, from dozens of our member producers today. We continue to believe that EPA is overstepping the bounds of its legal authority by proposing to partially waive the RFS based on perceived distribution capacity constraints. Nothing in the statute allows EPA to set the RVOs based on the so-called blend wall or alleged infrastructure limitations. In fact, Congress did consider measures that would have allowed waivers based on distribution infrastructure, but they rightly rejected those concepts because they knew allowing that type of off-ramp would entice the oil companies to hold the RFS program hostage, as they are now doing. Rather, Congress focused its waiver provisions narrowly on the question of supply, and the law is clear. If the supply is adequate to meet the statutory volume requirements, then obligated parties must find a way to distribute those volumes. And when EPA considers the supply of renewable fuel and whether it's adequate to meet statutory requirements, stocks of RIN credits must be taken into account. After all, RINs represent gallons of renewable fuel that are produced and were or are part of the physical fuel supply. RINs are gallons. And to completely dismiss carryover RINs from the determination of available supply seems illogical to us, and doing so will cause RIN stocks to balloon and RIN prices to crash. Because EPA is ignoring carryover RINs, the proposed RVOs, even in 2016, do nothing to break the blend wall. In fact, oil companies don't have to change anything they're doing as a result of this proposal. Oil companies could very easily meet their 2015 obligations simply by blending E10 and their 2016 obligations by blending E10 and turning in a handful of surplus RINs, which will be in ample supply. The U.S. ethanol industry is on pace to produce nearly 15 billion gallons in 2015, and when carryover RINs are properly taken into account, there's no doubt that the supply is more than adequate to meet the statutory RFS volumes for renewable fuel. And in fact, yesterday's DOE data showed that the industry is operating at a rate of 15.3 billion gallons annually. Finally, I want to point out a critical error that we've discovered regarding the proposed 2014 RVO that we believe needs to be corrected immediately. EPA has mistakenly assumed that RINs were generated on every gallon of exported ethanol, and thus that those RINs will be retired and unavailable for compliance. But in reality, nearly half of the ethanol exported in 2014 never generated a RIN, and thus EPA is underestimating the number of RINs available for compliance by nearly 400 million RINs. We think this is a significant mistake that will artificially inflate RIN stocks and undermine the RIN's ability to drive investment and innovation.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cooper. Thank you, Panel 1. I'd like to now invite Panel 3 up to the stage, and if I could ask the Panel 5 members to move to the staging area along the wall. Thank you.